Thank you very much. You're very kind. I hope you're enjoying yourselves here at the 7 Club. And right now, it's my pleasure to introduce a great little girl with a big, big voice. Ladies and gentlemen, Vicki Spencer. Vicki?
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Ronnie Allen, and before I introduce my guest, I have to put down my Baby Ruth. Just hearing the song about Baby Ruth, a rose and a... Actually, what you're hearing is a song that reminds me of a rose and a Baby Ruth. It's actually called Too Many Boyfriends, and I'm going to get serious. The wonderful lady who is singing that song is an entertainer who made her first public appearance in show business at the age of 2.5 months. She has been in 2 movies, namely Teenage Millionaire and Twist Around the Clock, with a couple of people you may have heard of, Chubby Checker and Dion. You just heard Dion a few moments ago. She's also toured all over the United States and several other countries with various bands that she was in. And we'll find out the weird names of some of those bands a little bit later on. And not only that, but her daughter is a professional singer. And we're going to hear from her as well. A little drum roll. We don't have the drum, but we do have the roll. I am so pleased to present, on the other end of the phone, Vicki Spencer.
Ta-da! Hey, Ronnie, it's so good to hear from you.
Well, it's good to hear from you, too. You're living in Florida?
I'm living in sunny, beautiful Florida. I wish everybody could be as in such a nice place.
Have you lived in Florida most of the last few years?
Yeah, about the last 20 years.
Florida is a pretty big state.
No, it's a pretty good ride. I mean, from one end to the other, it's right. About 10, 12 hours.
So which end do you live in?
I'm like about halfway,
outside
of Tampa.
You get hurricanes?
Yes. Hopefully not.
Why do I bring that up?
Well, because everybody asks when you live in Florida about the hurricanes, but I have my own way of warding them off. See, I went out and bought a generator, and ever since I bought the generator and we started every month when they see there's a hurricane, they just go away. As long as you're prepared, you don't have the problem. It's when you're not prepared.
I thought you were going to say you spook them out.
Well, sort of.
It doesn't work that way. The opening that we just heard was from Twist Around the Clock. You did 2 songs in that, and we heard Dion introduce you on a song called Too Many Boyfriends, and just a couple of lines in that song remind me very much of A Rose and a Baby Ruth. That was the reason for my lame joke.
Well, that was a little bit of a strange story, because I had never heard that song.
Well, you are an entertainer, and it was not too surprising to me, reading your biography, that you're an entertainer, because your dad was an entertainer. Was your mom in entertaining, too?
No, my mother was from Preachersville, Kentucky, and she was one of the most beautiful women that you would ever see. And when she walked on the set with my father, they wanted to hire my mother. And my father said, oh, no, no, no. I was just born, and she wanted to come home and raise me. But my mother was a beautiful woman and was voted Miss Keep 'em Flying in the Army. I'm serious.
Her Keep 'em Flying.
A gorgeous lady, but she did not sing. She did do a little bit of straight work for a comedian in some of the Army shows. Other than that, Mom was not in the loop. It was Dad and his side of the family.
Your dad was Lou Spencer.
Lou Spencer, yes. He was Dirty Lou Spencer is what they used to call him.
Wait a minute. Dirty Lou Spencer? Why
Dirty Lou Spencer. Like Dirty Rotten.
Dirty Rotten? Like, why?
Well, because he was one of those people that you didn't want to ask if you didn't want the truth. Because if you asked him, you were going to get the truth.
Ah.
So he would lay it out, most of the time, whether you wanted it or not, he would tell you, everybody was telling you, you know, how great you are, and he'd come over and say, that really stunk.
I bet you Harry Truman would have loved him. Mr. Plain Speaker himself, right?
Yeah, he was just a straightforward kind of person, and, you know, he was very good at what he did, and he wouldn't allow you to make a fool out of yourself, which in my eyes is a good thing.
What your father did, primarily, at least during a good portion of his life, was dancing, and there's a very interesting way that he learned how to dance.
Well, it's a very interesting thing about our country. My father's family were immigrants from Russia, and they moved to the Bronx. And my father's father passed away when he was about 27, my grandfather, and he was a shoemaker. His wife didn't speak any English, and of course, you know, she's trying to raise five children without speaking English in a foreign country, and my father decided he wanted to be a dancer. Now, in those days, being a dancer was a bum. You know, somebody in show business, get a real job. That's not, you know, that's not a good job. So he was born to be a dancer. He used to go to the theaters whenever the, you know, the big acts were playing, and he would actually sneak in by walking backwards when they were letting the people out. I'm serious.
I want you folks out there to think about this. The guy is walking backwards against the crowd that's coming out of the theater.
So that he could come in and see the next show.
Yeah.
And then he would go home. And his mom, of course, would ask where he was, and he would, you know, hem-haw around, lock himself in the bathroom because it had a tile floor, and he could hear the taps. So he would tap in there, and, of course, she'd be hollering, get a job, you know, and he'd be saying, no, I'm a dancer, I'm a dancer. So then he went on to go into the Army, and during boot camp was injured and punctured a lung. So they put him in special services, and because he was in special services, he wrote This is the Army, or one of those big shows where they put all the performers together, basically. And it was the USO tours, and that's where he met a lot of the people that he continued friendships with later on in life.
When your father learned how to dance, what dancing style was he emulating? Like, what did he see? Was it all tap dancing?
Yeah, so what happened is he didn't have any money, obviously, and his mother was working very hard. So he would go into these theaters and watch the dancers, and then he'd go to Harlem. And in Harlem, there were street dancers that used to stand on the corners, and they would exchange taps, and he would call it take five. You take five, and I take five, you know?
Huh.
And most of them were black dancers, Bojangles and all the big dancers that you hear about. And so he was schooled by those famous people. And subsequently, then he danced like a black man. So there was a part open for Singing in the Rain, and he auditioned for it, and so did Gene Kelly. And when my father auditioned, they said he danced too much like a black dancer. So he danced the part. And black dancers, if you'll notice, a really good tap dancer, one thing my father always taught me is their shoulders and their arms are steady constantly. Only their hips and from the waist down moves, and it's all done in the feet and in the taps.
Well, I just figured out something. The reason that Gene Kelly really got the role is because Gene Kelly did not sneak into the theaters and learn how to dance that way.
No, he had more of a choreographed thing.
Yes.
You know, the ballet influence and the regular, you know, the taught dance, whereas my father was a street dancer.
In other words, your father really was pretty close. I mean, he's definitely seriously being considered for the role.
Absolutely. He was voted at one time one of the top five dancers in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
I understand that your father was a member of a very well-known dance trio called the Dunhill Trio. Did he form that trio, or did he join them, or how did that happen?
When he went into the Army, and I told you he had an injury, he formed a dance troupe called the Dunhill Trio. He was the founding member.
Mm-hmm.
And Art Stanley and a guy named Cliff Foray were in the original group.
Right.
And Art Stanley was not only a tap dancer, but he was like an acrobatic dancer, which was something that was not done in trios at that time. So it was a very novel thing. And then after he left the Army, Cliff Foray decided to go in a different direction, and he got Bobby Roberts. And Bobby Roberts went on after the Dunhills to manage Ann Margaret and a lot of very famous people in the industry. He became a manager.
Did your father appear in any movies?
He made two movies. He made one with Dennis Morgan called My Wild Irish Rose, and the Dunhills are in there. He's the short little guy in the front.
And that movie pops up every year at a certain time.
Every St. Patrick's Day. So we get a little visit from my dad, which is a very nice thing to have. The second movie was called Call Me Mister and starred Betty Grable, and they had a very famous dance number in there where they all wore sailor outfits, and Betty is the shorter one, shorter than my father, the first one, my dad's right after her, and they do a second number in their Army uniforms as well, so that was the second movie my dad did.
Was your father a singer as well, or just totally a dancer?
No, couldn't carry a tune in a bucket.
Not,
and that was the funniest thing.
Not even a very light tune?
Not even a light tune, believe me. But he could dance. Every elevator we stopped at, every street corner, the feet were going constantly. He was always tap dancing. That was what he did best. And believe it or not, there was an old art of playing spoons.
Yes.
You know, and he was very good at playing
spoons. Well, did he ever appear on Ted Mack's Original Amateur Hour?
No, I don't think so.
Unless they had a lot of spoon players on that.
Yeah, show. I'm sure they did, but no. He was busy doing other things.
Now, during the time he was doing all was dancing, he got to mingle with some of the top show business people in the world, right?
Yes, he did. He stayed with the Dunhills for I don't know how many years, but eventually got on tour with Danny Kaye. And he went all over the world with Danny Kaye, and he opened for Danny at many places, at the RKO Theater in New York and the Roxy and with the Rockettes and the whole thing. I remember as a child going backstage, and I had all the dancers' names memorized, and the marquee chimps that used to ride on little motorcycles and come out, I used to play with them. And actually, Danny Kaye, when I was 2 months old, yeah, brought me out on stage. That was my first appearance.
Wow.
He brought me out because my father, you know, was opening for him, and Danny actually did dance with them. During the show, he did a couple of numbers with the Dunhills, yeah, and then he stopped, and I guess, I don't know, I don't remember.
Did you personally know Danny Kaye beyond that appearance?
Yes, as I got older, and my father was still working with him, I was about maybe 4 or 5, and he used to bring one of the children in the audience up, sit on his lap, and he would talk to them and sing the Ugly Duckling song, and I was one of those. I had twin brothers, and they were named after Danny Kaye and Billy Eckstein.
You also got to meet Buddy Rich, the drummer.
Yes.
Buddy was known for having, I'm trying to put this in a nice way, he wasn't the most gentle man in the world. He could fly off the handle a little bit.
He was a clone of my father.
You mean your father and Buddy both had tempers?
Very volatile tempers, very opinionated and very sure and cocky of themselves, you know. They wrote the book. So, you know, when you're a tap dancer, my father did all the charts, you know, for everyone. Now, when I say he did the charts, he didn't know a note of music. So this is another interesting little anecdote, because that's how he went on to write Nightclub X, which we'll get to later. But he would speak the things. He'd say, the horns to go ba-da-ba-ba, you know, whatever it was, he would speak it, and then an arranger would write it down. So he had all of these arrangements, and he was working, I believe, with the Dorsey Orchestra at the time, and they were calling a rehearsal. And it's very important, as I said, for tap dancers to know where the breaks are and the orchestra be rehearsed, because
sure,
he threw everything up.
Right.
At any rate, Buddy didn't show up for the rehearsal. So my father never heard of Buddy Rich, and Buddy Rich had never heard of my father. They're both about the same height, weight, and the whole thing. So my dad gets the rehearsal, and he has a fit. You know, the drummer's not there. So like 5 minutes before showtime, shows up Buddy. So my dad goes over to him, and he points it on his chest, and he's yelling at him. He said, "Listen, you little son of a gun." He said, "If you miss one note, I'm going to come back there and tear you off of those drums and, you know, beat the you-know-what out of you." So Buddy looked at him square in the eye, and he said, "Anything you can dance to, I can play." So my father said, "Well, you better be right, because there's going to be trouble." So, of course, he plays the show, and he didn't miss one beat. Not one beat. So at the end of the show, my dad, this was a good thing about him, he went back and he said, "Let me shake your hand." He said, "I apologize." He said, "That was a hell of a show." And from that day forward, they were best buds.
Wow.
In fact, cool. I have Carl Ritchie, who's Buddy's brother, his spaghetti sauce recipe. So that's a family heirloom now.
Well, there's so many different stories you could tell about your father. And, of course, in a short show like this,
right,
we don't have time to do them all. But when we eventually do the Vicki Spencer miniseries, we'll be able to get around to every one of these stories. Your father had to give up dancing because of something that...
Yeah, what happened is he came back off of the road after many, many years. My mom was, you know, struggling, trying to raise 3 kids by herself, and she didn't drive, and she was in Levittown. And it was difficult, so he decided he had to come off the road after all those years and get a, quote, real job, which he tried for several months, and he couldn't find anything that he was comfortable with. And he got a call from the Step Brothers, and they wanted him to help do a dance routine for them, one of the ones that they're most famous for, actually. So he went in, and he hadn't danced for about 7 or 8 months, I guess. And he was working very hard with them for about 3 or 4 days, and he came home and had a heart attack. I know that doesn't sound like a good thing. But when you're in show business and it's your life, things happen, and if you can't do what you've been doing and you still love show business, you will find another way to be in the business and be around the people that you know.
The heart attack was serious enough, so he was told he couldn't dance anymore.
Absolutely. He had heart problems in the whole family. He was only 40 years old with his first heart attack.
Right.
That's pretty bad, you know?
So how did he reinvent himself?
He had done some work a while back for Julius LaRosa and Fran Warren. They were going into some nightclubs, and they needed an act. So he helped outline the act and the clothing and the dialogue and the segues through and the arrangements and so forth. So he had kind of a taste of that from then. So when he couldn't dance any longer and he'd gotten involved with the people from Cameo Parkway and all of the acts that were famous at that time, all the teenage acts, you know, like Frankie Avalon or Bobby Rydell or Dion, all of these people had hits on the charts, and now they got to play the Copa. So how do they go in the Copa with no experience in front of a big live orchestra and to handle and command an audience and a show? So that's where my dad came in. He would come in and he would take up their hits and make a medley of their hits and find out if they had any other talents, like Bobby Rydell plays drums, Frankie Avalon plays trumpet, so he would integrate that into the act, give them dialogue, tell them, you know, the spotlights and the lighting and the, you know, the direction, a few jokes here and there, a couple of parodies and special material. And so he started to write nightclub acts for these people. And word spread like wildfire. And it went from the people that I've named and to Jackie Wilson, who ended up doing an album, Jackie Wilson at the Copa. And that was my dad's act. Paul Anka at the Copa, that was my dad's act. Tommy Sands at the Sands, that was my dad's act. So a lot of them have been recorded and released as albums. He worked with Jerry Lewis. He was on the Jerry Lewis Show. And Jerry Lewis became his very close friend. And I think he used to carry a picture of me when I was a little girl.
In addition to the stars that you've mentioned, there's some other stars that your father worked with.
He worked with Tony Bennett, Fran Warren, Anthony Newley, Julius LaRosa, Buddy Hackett, Joey Bishop, Gary Morton, Lucille Ball, Dion and the Belmonts, Chubby Checker, the Everly Brothers, Tommy Sands, Jimmy Rogers, Paul Anka, Jackie Wilson, Frankie Avalon, Joe Frazier, The Fighter, The Shirelles, The Crystals, Gene Pitney, Sam Cooke.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Quite a list.
He was on the Ed Sullivan Show a million times.
He had an amazing career. Your father passed away.
57. In fact, the last heart attack that he had, I was in Las Vegas working with the band, which we'll get to later, but it's a funny story because, you know, he's the old school vaudeville, and, you know, that means the show must go on, period, and you have to come off the stage soaking wet or you did not do a good show and he'd kill you, okay? So here we are in Vegas getting ready to go on and do our show, and they're wheeling him out in an ambulance, and we want to go to the hospital because this is his, like, third heart attack. You know, we're scared to death. And he's yelling at everyone, I'm not leaving unless they do the show. They've got a show to do. I'm not going to the hospital until they do the show. So we had to give him our word that we would go up and do the show while they took him to the hospital. And we did. And then we went to the hospital, and he had about 2 or 3 years after that, I would say, because what happened is Jerry Lewis found out about it, and Dr. DeBakey, who was just starting the heart procedures at that time, Jerry sent my father to see him and have him evaluated, and they said that 90% of the heart muscles were dead, so they couldn't do the surgery. And when he came back, you know, he sat us down, and my mother told us, you know, he's got it, you know, a year or two at most. And at 57, the fourth one got him. And, of course, I didn't think that was going to get him because I'd been through three and popped back.
So he passed away at
57, which is very young.
I would assume that because of him being in show business, that he probably encouraged you to get into show business.
You would assume that. You think that would...
But obviously I know something.
Obviously, you know,
he did everything
people
to
who
discourage.
Are in show business and are very opinionated, you got to remember, my father was not home during my childhood years. He would come home maybe a weekend, a month, if we saw him then, and he'd be the man that came in with all the presents. And then, of course, we're babies. We get up the next morning yelling and screaming. He's used to sleeping till 2, and he'd come out yelling at us. So it was a strange relationship.
He did not encourage you.
No, when I used to, you know, I guess the reason that, you know, you think back to what your motivations were when you were a child, you'd think I'd be a dancer, right? So,
sure, yeah.
A dancer. But I remembered one time he tried to teach me a step, and I couldn't do it, and I felt so bad that I never danced again. That was it. So then he said, I can't sing because I don't have a voice.
He also told you you weren't beautiful enough to enter a beauty contest.
Yes, that was another thing. I spent part of my time in Kentucky with my grandparents, who were my saving grace, because my mom was pretty much by herself. My dad was on the road. That was a totally different world. And then to go to the farm in Kentucky, where everything is normal, and you garden, and you go to church, and you do what you need to do, it was a very different kind of background. My grandfather thought the world revolved around me. So he came up to me, and he had a little supermarket in the town, and he said, look, we're having a Miss Boone County contest for this fair. And he said, I'd like to sponsor you as Miss Pointer's Supermarket. So I was thrilled. thrilled. I was like 15, you know, and I thought, wow, this is really great. So I called up my dad and I said, listen, I want to be in this beauty contest and I need to get a dress. And his answer was, why are you in a beauty contest? You're no beauty. He said, I'm not buying you a dress. And I said, what? And he said, no. He said, why waste your time with that? He said, just forget it. So I hung up and was in tears. And my grandfather looked at me and he said, you know what? He said, here's $12. I'll never forget this. Go to the Salvation Army and get yourself a dress. And I did. And it ended up, I won the contest.
Wow.
So I called my father back and I said, guess what? He said, what? I said, I won. You won? It was like, oh my God. And they're sending me to Lexington for the Miss America contest. So of course, all of a sudden, then I became a beauty and he was interested.
Yeah, this was Miss Boone County?
Yes, Miss Boone County and Latonia Racetrack. That was my two big
Latonia
titles.
Latonia Racetrack, where they have all these thoroughbred horses.
That's correct.
That eventually led to a Jimmy Clanton movie, didn't it? Because of
something
that...
Actually, when I went to Kentucky and my father was so hard on me about the singing, now I do understand. He would hear that all day at work. You know, he'd be working all day. He didn't want to come home and hear me banging on the piano, and I really didn't have any lessons, so I could only play in the key of C and, you know, figure out what I could with my little songs. I had gone on vacation to my grandparents in Kentucky, and I picked up a phone book, and I looked for recording companies. And there was only one. It was Fraternity Records in Cincinnati. So I called up the company, and I said, I'd like to speak to the president of the company. And this is, mind you, a 14, 15-year-old girl. And I got a hold of Mr. Carlson. There really was a Mr. Carlson in Cincinnati. And he said, well, come on over and introduce yourself. So I got a ride over, and I went in there, and I sat down, and he said, what can I do for you? And I said, I want to record for your company.
Wow.
He said, oh, really? He said, what do you do? I said, I sing and I write songs. He said, do you have any that you could play? So I did. And he was very tactful because I was just starting to sing. He said, you have a very nice voice, but I'd like to send you to a friend of mine at the Conservatory of Music in Cincinnati, Milt Wiener, and take some lessons. And he paid for them. So I went about 6 months, and I went home on vacation for Christmas break to see my mom and dad, you know, for the holidays. And my dad was on his way into Manhattan to meet with Howard Kreitzak from United Artists. He was pitching himself to do the musical numbers because he had done an act for Dion, done an act for Chubby, and, you know, all the people that were in there, and came very highly recommended. So I was along for the ride, basically.
And this was for the movie Teenage Millionaire.
That's correct. I went in with my dad, and I went to see Mr. Kreitzak, and we were sitting there, and my father's pitching himself for the movie. And he looks over at me, the producer, and he says, then what do you do? So my eyes get real big, you know, and my dad jumps up and he says, nothing. And I said, wait a minute, I sing. So Mr. Kreitzak says, you sing? And I said, yes. And he said, do you have any demos? And ladies and gentlemen, be prepared. Number one, first lesson. Because when the door opens, if you're not prepared, you can't walk through. So I said, yes, I have some demos. And I pulled them out and I let him hear them. So he's looking at my dad. My dad's like getting fidgety at this point because this was supposed to be about him. And so he says, you know what? I'm going to put so-and-so in for this one. I'll give Vicky a shot in the picture for you, Lou. And my father looks at me and he says, oh, no. Oh, no. If you want her in the movie, you put her in because you want her in, not because of me. So I'm like dying. I'm like going to kill him again. You know, how could you do this to me? Like, I got a chance to be in a movie. Oh!
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and I was a kid. So anyway, I know now why he did that. He wanted me to earn it on my own so that I could own it, you know? But then it killed me. I was like, broke my heart. But Mr. Kreitzak must have thought how disappointed I was. So he looks over and he says, I'll tell you what, if you can get me a record, I need two songs in 2 weeks. If you can get it for me, you can be in Teenage Millionaire.
Wow. Just get two songs. So,
yeah, two songs. And one of them I had written, he liked. I wait. So I go back to Mr. Carlson now at Fraternity Records, who's been so nice and kind and, you know, slow taking me along. And I said, Mr. Carlson, I have a problem. He said, what? I said, I need a record out in 2 weeks, and if I can do that, it'll be in a movie. And
right.
He said, what? I said, really, I'm serious. I told him the movie and what was going on. So he said, well, you know, let's get busy. Hurry up. You know, we got to get back here. First, we went into the office. I needed the second song. The first one I had, I wait.
Right.
And he brings in a staff writer for Fraternity Records, and his name is Bobby Bear.
Yes.
Bobby Bear went on to be a very famous country performer and writer.
And he was very famous as the singer that really sang All American Boy, but the record came out as by Bill Parsons. It was really Bobby Bear.
Right.
Did he write the song for you?
Yes, he wrote Hello, Mr. Dream. And then we filmed those two songs. You know, we had to go and record them at that point.
Great.
I can't believe it, but Mr. Carlson, you know, went the whole distance, took me to Nashville, got me what they called studio players at that time, and I had the Anita Kerr Singers, who used to back up Elvis Presley. I had Chet Atkins and Floyd Kramer were
wow.
on my session.
The tops. Now, Vicki, is a good time to listen to you sing. Now, people can't watch you because it's on the radio.
Right.
But they could imagine this motion
right.
picture, and you're singing each of these two songs. It's from
right.
motion picture Teenage Millionaire. So first of all, listen to the one that was written by Bobby Bear. Vicki Spencer singing the song called Hello, Mr. Dream.
I can hardly wait because we have a date. Tonight I know we'll be like all the nights before. I'll just close my door. And when I'm fast asleep, I'll just say hello.
Hello, Mr. Dream by Vicki Spencer. And now we're going to turn the record over. She sang this one in the film as well. This is a song that she wrote. This is Vicki doing I Wait.
I
That was Vicki Spencer doing an original song from Teenage Millionaire called I Wait. And I'm Ronnie Allen talking to Vicki, and now I think it's a good time to let people know who the main players were in that film. Would you like to start?
Jimmy Clanton, Rocky Graziano, Zazu Pitts.
You know who else was in that? Maurice Gosfield, who played Doberman in Sergeant Bilko.
Yes.
The musical stars were Chubby Checker, Bill Black's Combo, Dion, Marv Johnson, Jackie Wilson, and Vicki...
Somebody.
I can't read this.
And introducing Vicki Spencer.
Introducing Vicki Spencer.
Yes.
For those who want to hear a plot summary of Teenage Millionaire, I will tell you that a teenager whose father is a millionaire radio station owner secretly records a song and plays it on one of his father's stations. It becomes a hit. Then he falls in love with a girl who works at a local radio station who doesn't know who he is. How did I do?
Very good. That's
the entire plot.
And then how they got into the music is Rocky Graziano played Jimmy Clanton's bodyguard, I guess. And so Jimmy, who was trying to sneak these records in like you're talking about, he said, how about this one from Vicki Spencer? You know, and then they would play the record and it would go to a color. Now, it was a black and white movie, so it wasn't a color shot, but it was hued in like a pink or a blue.
Oh, okay, so it has the effect of being different. And you were the only girl in there in terms of performing.
Right. And the long and short thing, which is funny, is I got in the movie, but my father didn't get the job. So there's the funny part.
Oh, wow. You got in the
now,
movie.
Had I not been there at the right time and the right place and prepared, I wouldn't have been in it.
Teenage Millionaire led to you doing another motion picture.
Well, again, I'm telling you young performers out there, listen carefully. I was back home again in Kentucky, only this time I was home sick with the flu. And I get a call around noon, and it's from my agent in New York, and she says to me, Sam Katzman from Columbia Pictures saw you in Teenage Millionaire and would like for you to be in Twist Around the Clock. The only catch is you have to be here tonight at 8 o'clock so that we can get these songs tracked, get you into the studio tomorrow, and fly out on a red eye tomorrow night to be in the movie.
Wow.
So, can you do it?
Ah.
And I said, is this a trick question? Of course, I'll be there at 8 o'clock.
Yep.
She said, oh, by the way, one more thing. And I said, what? She said, you got to write a song. I said, what? She said, we've got a writer here that's got one. He's so sweet, we're okay with that one, but we need one more ballad. So I said, well, give me a title. So she says, too many boyfriends.
Just out of her head.
Oh. Out of her head. I said, too many boyfriends. Okay. All right. I said, I'll write it on the plane. So I did.
While you were promoting Teenage Millionaire, did you get to meet Clay Cole during
that? That's when I had the wonderful pleasure of meeting that magnificent man who really has not gotten the credit he deserved for all the hard work that he did for the performers that were trying to get themselves heard. And there was no format like American Idol or anything like that. There was nowhere to go. There was he was the first guy that had the TV show. And I was busy promoting my record from Teenage Millionaire.
Right.
And I got to meet Clay, and we struck up such a friendship, and he had me on there as new talent, and he kept pushing me and called me for the Palisades shows. And every time someone would drop out, he'd call up and say, Vicki, can you do me a favor? I got to cover this time. And I'd say, oh, thank you. I'd be grateful, you know.
Yeah.
Come running in. And that's where I met Clay, and that was the wonderful part about Clay, is that he gave everyone a chance to show what they could do. It was really up to you whether you did anything or not.
But if you had the talent, Clay was the one that enabled people to see
it. He's the one that would spot it, give you a chance, and then promote you. He would keep it up.
Right.
Remember Vicki Spencer? She's going to be here.
Yeah.
He constantly would do that.
And, of course, Clay had a style all his own.
Yes.
Before I bring Dion and Chubby Checker up to the stage, I want you to meet a beautiful 16-year-old singing star singing, He's So Sweet, here's Vicki Spencer.
Hi, Vicki, it's Clay.
Clay?
You've
got to be kidding me.
From the internet?
Oh, my God.
What are you doing with Ron? Are you reminiscing about Twist Around the Clock?
I was just singing your praises. your ears must be ringing.
I can't wait to hear the whole show now.
Well, I'm trying to give you credit what nobody else gave you, for goodness sake.
Nice.
If you won't speak up, I will.
Well, we had fun that weekend, didn't we?
We had a ball.
I remember we were there over the Thanksgiving holiday, and we weren't filming, and I think you, me, and Dion and Jimmy Clanton went over to Desi Lu to see a preview of Teenage Millionaire. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, it does.
You were in that with Jackie Wilson, right?
Yes, I was. I was in that. And, in fact, I was up for a couple of things with Desi Lu there.
That's right.
You know, they were trying to use me in a couple of series, but, you know, the usual thing, I was too young, I was too tall, you know.
Same with me.
What are you doing, Clay?
I just finished the book. It's coming out this summer. Shaboom, The Explosion of Rock and Roll.
Oh, my God.
I've been working on my website, feeling good. Last time we talked, you were telling me that you had a very talented daughter who is about to enter show but is still singing.
Yes, and I'm waiting for you to be the one to bring her out to the public and discover the second generation and start it all over again.
We'll call it Son of Twist Around the Clock.
The daughter of Twist Around the Clock.
I am enjoying my role of being a fly on the wall. I love it. When you said, I'm here with Dion and Chubby, I thought you were bringing Dion and Chubby to the phone, too, here. I was getting all excited.
I thought this was pre-recorded. That's how young you sound, Clay.
I keep them locked in my cellar. Whenever I feel like introducing somebody, they come up and take a bow.
You don't really know who you are, Clay. I hope the world starts to realize.
Listen, I'm happier than I've ever been in my life. I finally turned out to be the person I always wanted to be.
That's wonderful. You were a great person as long as I know you, so I don't know what you'd want to change.
Clay, thank you so much for calling in. And Vicki, you got any closing words for Clay?
I love you.
I love you too, darling.
I always will, and I'm your biggest fan.
See you on the internet.
Okay.
Bye-bye, Vicki.
Bye. That was so sweet.
Oh, well, it was so sweet of Clay.
That made my day. I have
to tell you. Are you back down to earth?
Okay. I really thought that was like an old clip.
It sounded like a recording. He was doing his old style.
I love him. He's wonderful.
I want to thank Clay for calling in. Well, what we have to do right now is play your shining moments from that motion picture, Twist Around the Clock. First, we're going to play the one with Dion introducing you. You heard a little bit of this at the beginning of the show. Dion, take it away.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You're very kind. I hope you're enjoying yourselves here at the 7 Club. And right now, it's my pleasure to introduce a great little girl with a big, big voice. Ladies and gentlemen, Vicki Spencer. Vicki?
Too many boyfriends, too many crushes, and I forgot the next line.
Too many heartaches from too many loves.
Too many heartaches from too many loves. And you wrote that on a plane.
Yes, I did. The funny part about it was about the Rose and the Baby Ruth.
Yeah, because you didn't even realize that.
I had never heard the song.
So tell me about the first time you heard it.
I was riding in the car, and I hear Rose and the Baby Ruth, and I went, oh! Yeah.
But it was only a couple of lines.
It was a couple of lines.
You were okay.
It was not anything that was an encroachment, but, you know, I do like to give credit where credit is due, and I lifted it. I didn't mean to.
Is it okay if I just play a little bit of George Hamilton IV's hit record, A Rose and a Baby Ruth, and then just play a little bit of yours right next to it to see how similar they are?
I would be honored. That's very good company to be in.
Okay. Your wish is my command.
We a quarrel, a teenage quarrel.
Too many boyfriends, too many crushes.
Do 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 do.
So, what do you think? They are pretty close, right?
Except it does change in just the right amount of time.
Just in the right amount of time. Yeah, otherwise it's too many Baby Ruths or a rose and a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Now we're going to hear the other song from Twist Around the Clock. And by the way, before I play it, I want to mention that the interesting thing about the way this motion picture was promoted, there was no star in terms of a human star. Everybody was billed equally. If you go on the web and you see a photo of a poster from Twist Around the Clock, left to right, I believe it's Chubby Checker, Dion, Vicki Spencer, the Marcells, and
introducing
Clay Cole. We didn't have to introduce Vicki Spencer because she had already been introduced in Teenage Millionaire.
Right.
So the star of the movie was the twist. And here's Clay introducing you. This is Memorex. This is not Clay Live. From the motion picture, this is Clay Cole introducing Vicki Spencer.
Hi, now, here's something for the boys. A young girl we think is going to be a big star. Here is 16-year-old Vicki Spencer.
Vicki Spencer, and that was He's So Sweet. Two different songs, very different. Up-tempo, and the other one was, of course, the ballad.
When you look at the movie and you see the numbers that I did, it was kind of interesting, too, because I was at least a foot taller than everybody else that was on that stage. I had a totally different look. And Dion and I were friends, and this was an interesting little thing, too. We had a couple of dates, and he's always in love with Sue. We kind of knew that. But he called me at 3 o'clock in the morning one night and was writing a song called Run Around Sue.
Ah, he wrote that with Ernie Maresca. Great song.
Yeah. He said, how do you like this song?
Wasn't Run Around Vicki.
No, it wasn't. But as I said, we kind of had like a crush on each other, and both of us were afraid of the other one. So it was really funny. And we were up for parts in a movie, and they said I was too tall for him.
You know, there are some things that are meant to happen, and there are some things that are not meant to happen. And in your case, you had a few close calls. In other words, things that you almost got. For example, you almost got a role in Shindig.
Yes, there was a contest nationwide through the William Morris Agency, and there were 23,000 girls entered. And they narrowed it down to two, one from New York and one from California. I was from New York, and Donna Lauren was from California. And they flew us to Chicago, and I actually even wrote a little jingle for them. And I thought they wanted the all-American girl, you know, so that's who I was going to be. And Donna Lauren came in and kind of wiped her nose, you know, in the commercial. And they called me on a Friday, and they said that they thought that she fit more what they were looking for, but not to do anything until Monday, because they were going to offer her the deal, and if she didn't take it, then I was in. But they offered her a $100,000 deal, I think it was a three-year deal, with Shindig, and who's going to turn that down at that age?
Yeah.
So I was very disappointed at that point, thinking, well, maybe it's time to just, you know, go in another direction. So now I tried some modeling. I had done some modeling with Clay, actually, with The Twist, which is what had started it. We did a Twist magazine spread, which was about 5 pages of us demonstrating The Twist. And then everything kind of calmed down. You know, we had done the Palisade shows and all of the things that we were doing, and it just came to an end. And after that disappointment with the Donna Lauren thing, I just figured, you know, I'm done. And my brothers were forming a band, and, you know, I kind of got in on the action there, and I wanted to be in the band, and they really didn't want me in the band. They wanted a boys band. They were called the Rotten Kids.
Can I ask one question? Why?
My father named them that.
Your father? He said, you're just Rotten Kids. You should
be. Why'd you call yourself the Rotten Kids?
Yeah.
You know, that was an expression back then. Rotten Kids. Okay? So they became the Rotten Kids, and they played at a club called the Oriental's Best of Go-Go in Queens, and they were looking for go-go dancers. So, of course, here I am. Now, from being in the movie, I have to swallow my pride and go in and audition to be a go-go dancer. But I did it, and I got the job not only as the go-go dancer, but as the head go-go dancer, and I really didn't know anything about dancing. So I thought that was interesting. And then someone came into the club and saw me performing and my brothers and asked if I could do a number in their band. So I sat in, and I sang one number with them, and they approached me later and said, I'd like to put a band around you. So they were going to call us Queen Victoria and the Queen's Men. Meanwhile, my brothers are stuck here and trying to get out of Queens, and they're playing in this Chinese restaurant, and I've got now a band that's going on tour. So I did that for about 6 months, and they were still sitting doing nothing, and they decided, well, we should form a band together. And in between the two, I went from Queen Victoria to, are you ready for another great name? The Bad Seeds.
The Bad Seeds? I like that motion picture.
You like the motion picture. Yeah. Now, it was just those times when people would pick crazy
names. The Rotten Kids, The Bad Seeds.
The Bad Seeds. So then when we decided to get together, I was making money, and of course my brothers weren't, and they got this brilliant idea, why don't we form the band together? And so we went off to Kentucky to find some new musicians, and we did, and we came out of there as, I believe, the Bubblegum Machine.
What about the Fabulous Fakes?
That came later.
Oh.
How do you go from the Rotten Kids to the Fabulous Fakes, right?
Well, we're going to play a few Bubblegum Machine cuts, but the interesting thing is, if you're expecting a bubblegum act, this really wasn't a bubblegum act. The name was bubblegum, but the music, with the exception of the first track, track was kind of bubblegum, but it came out before the term bubblegum really was used for that type of music.
Right, which was kind of detrimental to us because we thought it was a cool name, and on our album cover it shows pictures of us blowing bubbles, and it was that kind of a thing.
Right.
And then along comes bubblegum music. So we got thrown into that category, which we really weren't. We were more towards the rock stuff, you know.
Right.
And our album was out, and I recently was checking some information, and I found an article where it says, we were sorry to report that the Bubblegum Machine was on tour in Vietnam and were killed. And I went, what? So I wrote back and I said, sorry, live and well and living in Florida. And the guy wrote me back and he said there was this rumor going around and I think I've narrowed it down so we may be able to solve this mystery today.
The confusion came about because that group was not really called the Bubblegum Machine. They were called something else, really. It was close to it.
Right, the Bubble Machine.
They were the Bubble Machine.
Yes, so that was the rumor, so we've gotten rid of that. But it said even in the review that, you know, we were classified wrongly because it's not really considered bubblegum music.
Who were the members of the Bubblegum Machine?
Myself, my brother Danny Spencer, who is the drummer, my brother Billy Spencer, who played guitar and was our lead singer, and Danny Evans, who was our keyboardist, organist, and George Peel from Kentucky. He was our bassist.
We're going to listen to a bit of the first track, and it's called What You Gonna Do For Me Now. And this is the track that comes probably closest to what people would call bubblegum music.
That's the reason why anything you want, I'll try to buy. And you love me, so you say, stand beside me all the way. Come down to my last dollar. I can hear you yell and holler. Hey, na 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 na
What You Gonna Do For Me Now, the Bubblegum Machine. Track 3 is one where you're doing the lead singing on, a song that never comes.
Again, we have one of these stories where, you know, you think you get a break, and then something pulls the rug out from under you.
A break that never comes.
A break that never comes. But you got to not give up. I recorded that track called The Song That Never Comes, and Mama Cass heard it, and she decided to release it. So that was the end of my cut on the album being released as a single.
Who wrote the song?
I haven't got a clue.
It was not written for you. It was shopped to other people.
Exactly. It was presented to us as material for our album. That was the cut they picked for me to do.
So much for your hit single.
Really.
Let's listen to a little bit of A Song That Never Comes.
Waiting for a summer day in the middle of the fall. Hoping that you're coming back. Well, I know you're never coming back at all.
Song That Never Comes, a record that never gets released. But it never came out as a single?
No.
But actually, the album did pretty good, though.
Yes, the album went even out of the country, and we ended up doing a tour in Argentina.
You also did a pretty nifty version of For What It's Worth, and let's hear just a little bit of that.
Something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there. He's telling me I've got to beware. I think it's time to stop. Hey, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going around.
That was a little bit of For What It's Worth from the Bubblegum Machine LP.
Right.
After the Bubblegum Machine, there was a group called Horatio.
Well, actually, in between, that's where the Fabulous Fakes came in. Hazel Bishop was looking for a group, and they went to the William Morris Agency, again, was our agency, and they submitted us to be the group to represent a new product which had fake fingernails. And they needed a girl in the group, obviously, to wear the fake fingernails. So we became the Fabulous Fakes, and it was a sponsorship, which was actually quite a good thing. They gave us Jeeps and clothing, and they gave our services to a lot of the armed forces, you know, all the different places that USO-type tour things would be, and they would pay for our expenses to go and do these shows for free. And we did a lot of them, and we were very popular with them, and then all of a sudden, the company yanked the product off the market because they were having trouble with it. So we lost that whole contract, and they basically paid you to go away, you know? So that was the end of the Fabulous Fakes, but we had already stopped doing shows, and one night we're sitting at the house, and we were rehearsing, and it was about 4 p.m, and no one knew what was going on, and we get a call from the Naval Academy that was near the house there, and they said, what time are you coming, and are you coming for dinner? And we said, what do you mean? Well, we've got the Fabulous Fakes here for a dance tonight. And we were like floored. So we said, okay, give us the directions, and we just got up and got dressed and went and did it anyway, you know, because we didn't want to leave the guys without any entertainment. But the contract was canceled.
It came out of retirement.
You know, that's what you call professionalism in this business, and that's one thing we can thank my dad for, one of the things that we can thank him for. I don't want to make him sound like he was a bad guy, because he obviously did something right, or we, you know, wouldn't be okay.
Now, the group Horatio had a single that was on many record charts in the eastern part of the country, a song called I Gotta Have You.
Yes, that one made number one on the East Coast, and then I think 24 and 27 on the charts throughout the country. And, you know, we went on with Horatio. We played Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas with Milton Berle for 2 weeks and Sinatra for 2 weeks. And we did the Mike Douglas Show, the Merv Griffin Show, the Tonight Show.
We're going to listen to this record by Horatio. This is your brother Billy in the lead.
Yes, it is.
And you're in the background doing harmony.
That's correct.
And the song is called I Gotta Have You.
Oh, I want you. have you in this world where there's so little to have. I gotta have someone, but I'm breaking in two, 'cause I'll never have you. I told myself there's somebody else.
That was Horatio, and it is with sadness that I mention this. Billy passed away. When did he pass away?
1976. What happened is we had just finished, you know, a tour and ended up at Westbury Music Fair, opening for Anthony Newley and Buddy Hackett, and the work was drying up, and my brother decided to form his own group, and he went out to California and formed a group called Spencer, and he wrote 9 fantastic songs and recorded them, and about 2 weeks before it was accepted by a label, he had an accident, and he fell and was killed. And that was the end of the Spencer music, except that my daughter, Jamie, may be redoing some of the music because it was excellent music. And that was a very sad time. And I had gotten out of the group and went on to meet my husband, who I met in the group. He was my guitar player, actually.
His name is?
His name is Harry.
All right.
And we're married 37 years this Thursday. The funny thing is I thought he was just a performer like me, you know, and he'd been doing this his whole life. And I didn't know he just took a year off of his life to be a performer. But he's a communications expert, and he's in global affairs on frequencies and satellite communications. He put the first HBO link on the air. He's an innovator in the cable industry. So he was a different direction, and I probably wouldn't have picked him other than the fact that he was the guitar player in the band.
And he just returned from India.
Yes, he just got in from India last night. And then, you know, after we were married for a while, years went by, and I got out of the business, and I had the children, and I figured, I'm done, you know.
But, what?
My kids both grow up and want to be in the business, and I don't want to tell them that, you know, I told them it's a tough business. You really have to like it. So I was very, you know, strict with them, not mean, but strict, honest and true.
Not quite as strict as your father was.
No, I never ever
discouraged like
approach that my
way.
Father took, but yeah. He was old school, and I'm not, you know. So
sure.
They decided to try out for performing arts school, and I helped them actually do their auditions to get in there. And then as time went on, you know, they started entering some contests, and I ended up meeting some other kids and other moms that were like me, and they all got into this troupe, and they were performing, and we had a director that was a little difficult to deal with, and he kept screaming we were stage moms, and, you know, I don't know if you know or not, there's 2 definitions of stage moms, and one is where the mom is saying, come on, sing for the relatives, Tatala, sing, get on the stage, you know, going, please, leave me, mom, I don't want to do this, I'm embarrassed, you know, whatever, and then there's the other mom where the kid's saying, mom, I need dance lessons, I need shoes, and I have to have a ride, can you help me rehearse?
Yeah, so
that's the kind of moms we were.
That's okay? The kind you were, okay.
So and we got insulted because he kept calling us stage moms as a slam. So he had a temper and he fired us one day, and we had worked on the show for about 3 or 4 weeks, and we had all the costumes and the scenery and the props, and I choreographed the kids and scripted it and gave them dialogue and the whole thing, and we're all dressed up with nowhere to go. So the moms are sitting there, and the kids are looking at us, and they said, it was so funny because, I mean, they were from age 7 to, like, 15,
yeah.
And they said, you know, you're doing this, and she's doing that. Why do we need him? And we looked at each other and said, no, you're right. We
you're
don't.
Right.
So we decided to get even, and we called ourselves Stage Moms Productions.
And there you go.
And we had 15 kids at one time. One is in Nashville now, and she's a songwriter, singer, and has worked with Jamie O'Neill and Sarah Evans, and she's got a clothing line for babies. Another of my comedians was in The Waterboy with Adam Sandler. I have a little opera soprano singer, Janetta Salty. She does all the Italian festivals and is working in the industry. My son, we haven't mentioned, David, is a classical keyboardist, and he writes songs and plays beautifully as well. And my daughter. So, I mean, look what happened with all the kids.
Is there a website for Stage Moms Productions?
No, not any longer. We kind of dissolved the company. They all grew up, and I'll never forget the line the director said to us that kind of clinched it. He said, they're all going to grow up and leave you. And I looked at him and I said, you know, that's what they're supposed to do. You give them shoes and let them walk.
Yeah.
You know, train them and give them
the
best environment to learn.
Nice.
And that's right.
That's
and if you've done your job right, then they go on and they have a good career and they know what's right and what's wrong and how to spot a phony when somebody's there.
Vicky, she's the rotten kid. She's also a fabulous fake. And she's also
a bubblegum machine.
She's a bubblegum machine. She's a bad seed. And most of all,
a stage mom.
A stage mom. Yes.
And with that, I'll promote my
daughter. Now, with that, I have somebody very special, and I just saw the light flash, and she is waiting on the phone to participate in the show.
And I'm so proud of her, because I really am, of the person that she is and the talent that she is.
She does have a website, right?
Yes, she's got a beautiful website, and it tells what she's up to and what she's been doing. It's jamieperlow.com, JamiePerlow.com.
It is my pleasure now to present the daughter of Vicki Spencer.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Jamie.
This is Jamie Perlow.
Yes, it is. That's correct.
Jamie, I want to say, first of all, thank you for joining us on this show. Your mom is, she's too much. She's wonderful.
She's incredible. Yes, she is. I'll
second
that.
Incredible lady, incredible background, and believe me, she got an incredible surprise today, a few moments ago. We had a special call from, who called, Vicki?
Clay Cole, and I thought it was a clip.
Yeah, she thought it was
wonderful.
She finally said, hi, Vicki, it's Clay.
She thought it was a recording.
That's tremendous.
I want to point out that you just came off stage. Do we have like a break for 10 minutes now? Or what?
I've got a good 10 minutes, yeah.
Okay. And you're performing at a place called?
The Green Iguana, the Veterans Expressway. There's at least four of them around in my area where I get a chance to play at.
I was sent a CD of some stuff that you've recorded. And what I'd like to do is play a medley of three songs from this CD, shortened versions of them, just to give people an idea of how versatile you are. I'm going to listen to a little bit of Redneck Woman and I Can't Make You Love Me, and then a song that is generally associated with male singers, Jump, Jive, and Wail.
Victoria's Secret. Now there's stuff real nice, ain't it? So I can buy the same damn thing on a Walmart shelf half price. She looks sexy, just as sexy as them models on the TV. Make my man want me. Well, you might think I'm trashy, a little too hardcore. Hey, but in my neck, up from one time, just the girl next door. Cause I'm a redneck woman, ain't no high class broad. I'm just a product of my raising, and I say, hey, y'all, and yee-haw.
Turn down the lights, turn down the bed. Down these voices inside my head. Lay down with me. Tell me no lies. Just hold me close and don't patronize. Don't patronize. Gonna hail. Oh, baby, baby, looks like it's gonna hail. Oh, you better come inside, let me teach you how to dive and wail. Come on, you gotta jump, jive. Spin your way, 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 you gotta jump, jive.
That was great. You have different styles that you could do. It's just amazing.
Well, thank you very much.
Redneck Woman is Gretchen Wilson's. That's a great song.
It's a wonderful song, and it's a lot of fun to perform. People really get into it.
I Can't Make You Love Me. Who recorded that?
That song was actually a song that Bonnie Raitt worked on with Bruce Hornsby.
Of Bruce Hornsby and the Range, I remember them.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why it's got all those warm, beautiful chords in it. It's one of my favorites.
And as far as Jump, Jive, and Wail is concerned, I seem to associate that with, was it Brian Setzer that did that?
But yes, Brian Setzer Orchestra redid it recently, a few years ago.
You recently wrote a song called Empty Rooms.
Yes.
And I want to play that song, but before I do, Vicki was telling me there's a little story behind that. Is that being submitted for possible consideration for motion pictures?
Actually, it is. There are a couple of internet companies that my work has been submitted through, SAB Records, which is who I'm working with here in Tampa, and Corey Jacobs, and he's actually submitted that song to Broad Jam and I believe Taxi as well, and it's going to be shopped around for some movies and TV things, little spots like that.
This is Jamie Perlow doing a song that you wrote all by yourself?
Yes, I did, all by myself.
An oregano song.
An oregano song.
Empty Rooms. I know you have to get back. You don't want to leave the audience waiting out there. And I want you to make me one promise. No pressure here. No pressure whatsoever.
Okay, okay.
But the promise is that when you have a commercially released album come out, I want to be the first one to do a full-length interview show to help you promote it.
I would be honored. That would be wonderful.
And Vicki heard me make the offer here, so she can hold me to it, too.
I'll stick clay on you.
Well, the time has just flown. It's been just incredible fun for me, and I hope for you, Vicki, and Jamie, in the brief period of time that you've been on the phone, I hope you've enjoyed this.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure.
Jamie's job to carry the torch.
Carry the torch brings us to the song that I have chosen to close the show. And is it okay with you, Vicki, if I close with a Jamie song?
Of course. I'd be honored.
I'm one of the people that thinks that maybe this should have been our national anthem. It's easier to sing. Written by the great Irving Berlin. Jamie, there's a little story behind your deciding to record God Bless America.
There is. It was because of the 9/11 tragedy. The next day, there was a telethon on TV that was the American Heroes Tribute Telethon, and I was absolutely captivated by everyone's unique arrangements of songs that they chose that they felt were appropriate for this particular incident that had happened. And this song was given to Celine Dion, and it's a fantastic version of God Bless America, and it was so well-received and so beautiful. It was used to open the doors on Broadway after Broadway had shut down, the first song that was on stage on Broadway, actually. And I was very moved by the arrangement, and it just felt so good to hear a song that has been sung so many times given new life. It was very, very inspirational, and I decided to record it, and it's one of my fan favorites.
Jamie, I'm going to let you get back, so I'll say goodnight to you, and thank you so much for joining me. And I'm also going to say goodnight to Vicki. Vicki, thank you so much for doing this show, and maybe we can do another show, because we just didn't get a chance to tell some stories. There's so much more, and of course, I'll do that show in the future.
Well, Ronnie, we want to thank you for giving us
Absolutely.
The opportunity of being on your show, and it's been an absolute pleasure and a lot of fun. Anytime, we'll be there.
This is Jamie Perlow. God Bless America. Good night, everybody.
God bless America. Land that I love. stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above, from the mountain.